Good morning, everyone. Welcome to 42 Minutes. Today is the 29th of May, my grandmother's birthday, and we're speaking this morning with Jason Barrera about his piece in the Think book about Philip K. Dick and about the monomyth and Gnosticism. I think the conversation is going to begin with a series of pieces that have been in the New York Times about Philip K. Dick, written from the point of view of a philosopher. But go on, Will, and tell us what you thought, because I think Jason's going to be able to elucidate the idea of Gnosticism.
Well,
but go ahead.
Well, I would like for him to start with that. I mean, perhaps I'm confused on what Gnosticism truly would be. I mean, do you have anything that you could elaborate?
Well, let me start with this, actually. I highlighted a passage from his piece, A Child's Treasury of the Tarot, from the Think book. This is the passage called Negredo. It says, "The cards we have previously encountered are the tools that we have at our disposal. It is now that we come to what is properly called the great work. Now, many traditions state that the path of enlightenment is very easy. One merely has to realize that they are already enlightened. But what is it that prevents us from experiencing this enlightened state? It is the shadow, and until we first integrate it and then overcome it, it will continue to entice us back into the world of illusion and separation. As the fool becomes more energetically aware, he comes to realize that the shadow itself has a tangible quality to it. It is an energy, but a dark, restrictive energy that opposes his will. It is then that we know that we have reached what may properly be called the first phase of the alchemical work, the Negredo." So, Jason, could you speak to the Gnostics and the great work?
That passage sounds really ridiculous when you read it out loud.
It could be my voice that I put too much. I gave it a dramatic reading.
I wrote that a long time ago, and
it's good.
I'm not the same person.
What? Don't you think that's like
you're undredging ghosts from the past here?
Well, what is Gnosticism? I mean, what's the definitive characteristics of Gnosticism?
That's a broad question.
Well, why is Philip K. Dick and Gnosticism synonymous for some reason?
Well, Philip K. Dick had a certain experience where he believed that he had contacted the spirit of Sophia, or wisdom, and she had elucidated to him that we live in a sort of prison, and that sort of defines his post-1974 work, more or less.
So, the prison, is that the element of Gnosticism, that somehow that the world is evil, that this demiurge, this fake god made an irrational world?
I suppose you could put it that way, yes. I don't know, when you try to boil Gnosticism down to, like, this whole kind of simplistic notion of, like, the world being evil and the demiurge being some kind of comic book villain, then things tend to go off the rails a little, and it's easy to ridicule.
Nice.
It's better to regard the demiurge as being sort of the power of nature that sort of toys with the element of spirit to create the material world. And when you understand that, it's more like, oh, well, that's really just makes sense.
But, I mean, certain things like what you've kind of uncovered and wrote about in your Think book piece show a certain amount of pattern and sense of humor to the galaxy, right? To the universe or to whatever's in charge.
Yes.
So where's the balance between those two? I mean, Sync really isn't Gnosticism. I've heard a couple of individuals say that they really think that there's something wicked going on, you know what I mean, from what Sync's telling them. But I see the whole range. I see wickedness and this totally, like, beneficial sense of humor.
You see it's the sort of both things at the same time. That's really as far as I can... It's not irrational. Like, it can't be apprehended rationally, I don't think, as to exactly, like, the intent of the cosmos from your perspective. I don't know.
Douglas.
Okay, so one of the key things that I've come upon, you know, so as we look at composite characters and various patterns in movies and stuff, we end up finding Philip K. Dick's Dead Girl a lot.
Yes.
And in the scheme of the monomyth, or not even the monomyth, but just the alchemical narrative, that would be Sophia's death, right? So this is spirit.
Yes, there's an original death when say we have our Sophia figure who falls from the heavens and then creates the world in her distress, and it's an unfinished world that she creates. It's an abortion.
This all has to do with his sister.
Well, right. So that was like the symbolic meaning behind her death.
So he used Gnosticism to kind of understand his own exoteric material life, you think?
Sure.
Why not? All right, hold on. The dialect is the yin-yang and Tao. As it is above, so it is below. Refers to the microform of yang and yin, and the microform of yin and yang. This is what I saw. A push-pull, flip-flop, two mutually antithetical propositions are set up. Mine are... Number one, your sister is the anima in your mind. She is physically dead. Two, you are physically dead and live in your sister's mind as thought. For the mind, red brain, red macro, body, and blood. And she is in plural microforms in your world. So she is in her own thought. The part contains the whole. The macro contains the micro, and the whole contains the part. The micro contains the macro. And he basically says that these flip-flop back and forth. I am dead, I am alive, I am dead, I am alive. She is alive, she is dead, she is alive, she is dead. But all of these symbolisms, like Leonardo DiCaprio, who I know you're a big fan of, Jason, I mean, all of these are the same themes, right?
Yes.
What does that mean? I mean, is that just a blueprint for our reality? Or is
yes, this is the monomyth. The monomyth is about the death of a girl, so every story is really about that. And so if you're not getting that, I'm not really sure what the hell you're looking at with these movies.
No, I do. I just don't know what it fucking means. I mean, all of this. But it's not the same all across the board. It's just certain individuals. See, I have this idea because you told me once that you see the same story over and over, and I think different people see different stories, the things that they resonate with. Would you agree with that?
Maybe. What's the other story? because look, after I watched Eyes Wide Shut, I went over to Doug's house, and I watched Vanilla Sky, and I had no idea what that movie was about.
It's the same story.
At all. And, of course, it's about Sophia being dead, and, you know, And it's basically a Philip K. Dick story. It's basically Ubik. And so Tom Cruise is in this frozen state, and Sophia's dead, and he's got to get out. And so it's just like the story just follows me around. I don't seek it out. It just happens everywhere. But anyways, what's your position?
No, it's just funny because you're like, no, I totally get it. I totally get it. I don't know what it means. I don't know what to do with it.
But let's start with the riddle of the Sphinx. What is the riddle of the Sphinx, Jason?
Four legs in the morning, two legs at midday, and three legs at night.
Right. The answer is man.
The answer is man.
Right. Right. Avatar.
Okay, so then it seems like one can take the monomyth a number of different ways. You know, like, so let's say you recognize this pattern.
Yes.
You can say, conspiracy, there are human forces at work manipulating reality in a number of ritualistic fashions to create the conditions.
Trying to push Gnosticism?
Well, like, this is their state religion, and therefore
the rituals have no power in and of themselves. It's only what you see in them. See, people think that magic has this power that it doesn't really have.
Because it's only self-reprogramming, really.
See, I guess I don't believe in magic, okay? I don't believe you can just make a ritual and expect something to happen. It's just an empty form. It's not the substance of the act itself. Like, the Eucharist is just, like, the whole Eucharist ritual in the church doesn't mean anything. There's not really a transubstantiation there. It's just an empty ritual. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But so then, that's the gross material reality, but then the interior reality of the Eucharistic ritual is something different? Or
you can understand it to have a certain spiritual meaning if you penetrate through the outer lie of the outer church, but that's a whole different story altogether.
Well, because it seems like the alchemical point of view ends up with the purpose being piercing the heart of, you know, the soul of the world or whatever. And
yes.
And so it comes together pretty nicely with the idea of sex, but the sex is the physical manifestation of the spiritual process, the spiritual...
Yes.
With the product being the... What do you call that? The, you know, 2001 Star Child. Both literally and metaphorically.
Yes, the philosophic child, yes.
The ultimate, best, most accurate system is Taoism, the yin-yang dialect, and the Tao is Sophia, or the Logos, and the whole thing is a component and a binary computer which she, the Tao, or Sophia, designed.
Okay, so that's kind of like the nature of the conversation that's been going on in the synchrosphere. I don't know if anyone's ever used that, the synchrosphere. Yeah. This idea that the monomyth is the programming of some kind of machine. So the Wrong Way Wizard has an idea about something called the Valis Loop,
right,
which recognizes the monomyth, but then thinks that the monomyth has some sort of programming to trick us, either into a form of mysticism that traps us or enfeebles us, or that there is something like Luciferian in nature about reality that is... What are your thoughts about that? I mean, so it comes from the same place almost as the conspiracy, where we're looking at reality and thinking I don't know.
I haven't listened to his conversation yet, so I don't.
Are we talking about Wrong Way?
Yeah.
Well, there's another place where you can find even more Wrong Way. There's the new Sync book radio, which is, I think it's called Always Record.
Yes, I haven't had the chance to listen to that. I've been away for a little bit.
Have you been on Always Record yet, Jason? I thought I saw your name.
Yes, I was on one of them, talking about Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, because I have been listening to them, and they're pretty in-depth. The new one with Wrong Way Wizard is good. It's David Plate, or MK Ultrasound, Bill Klaus, Alan, and Wrong Way. And it goes in every which direction at once. It's pretty good. The thing is, basically, I understand what Wrong Way is saying to a certain degree. He thinks we're in a loop. He thinks that the Jewish alchemist made a loop on a tape that plays continuously, so the Savior never comes. Basically, the Matrix.
But in Jason Teets in the Sync book, okay, go ahead, Jason.
We'll see. He has this thing with Jesus that What is this thing with the Savior? Because the whole thing is really that, like, the outer church will just worship this external Savior, this man on the cross. But once you get into the end of the esoteric church, you realize that, like, you have to become the man on the cross and go through your own crucifixion.
Like, K. Dick thought that he was his own Buddha.
Right.
See, that's so what's so brilliant about all of this, though, y'all. I mean, like, it plays. All good casting. I respect that. When people say it's just good casting, that's hilarious. But it doesn't complete it for me. It doesn't draw a neat enough picture. Like these individuals. Like I was just talking about this. Jessica Biel. Jessica Biel played in Nick. She played in Next, which is a kind of a movie version of Philip K. Dick's Golden Boy or Golden Man. And she's also in the next Total Recall. So Total Recall happened or was written before K. Dick's experience, I think. I think it was written in 53. Could be wrong. And I think it was written in 63, and his experience was in 73, 74. So, Total Recall has the guy have Total Recall off of being injected in the book with sodium pentothal. It's not the Montauk chair that is so vibrant in the new ones. It was sodium pentothal, which is exactly what happened to Dick. Dick thought that he remembered his past lives and his future life from this whole golden fish sodium pentothal incident. But things were happening to K. Dick before then. Jason, you don't believe in magical ritual, but do you believe in extraterrestrial communication through this esoteric knowledge? I mean, is that the point of esoteric?
In a matter of speaking, but people use like the idea of like flying saucer entities to kind of substitute for like the notion of contact with like a spiritual source. So when we get into Robert Anton Wilson talking about, say, contacting aliens from Sirius, like this is true in a sense, but it's the sort of the spiritual Sirius of the Freemasons and not literal aliens. It's not the sort of like little aliens that we would see in popular culture, I guess.
Don't you think
but
that that's like just a way of seeing, like some individuals have seen little green men because that's the form of this. It's all according to your own mental programming. Like if you're expecting to see little green men, you're going to see little green men.
Right, and that's the whole Close Encounters thing, right?
Right.
Where Devil's Tower is the esoteric tower of the tarot. Where they first get contact with the alien intelligence.
I hear you. Okay, so where I was going with this is Jessica Biel is going to be in the new Total Recall as well. So she plays the Sophia part, this brunette girl that lies at the turning point of Dick's experience. How do you think this whole mechanism works with these actors replaying these roles over and over again? I mean, is this just good casting?
It really has to be.
Golden fish.
Otherwise, it's just too ridiculous to...
I mean, if it's ridiculous, if these actors have no clue of what they're doing, and they still might, even if it's planned by some higher agency, we'll call it. But if it's not, I mean, if the higher agency is the collective unconscious, what would that mean?
Well, obviously, you've seen the workings of a higher wisdom at work in the universe.
And are you that higher wisdom?
Well, that means the loop is breakable.
Possibly. The what?
The loop is breakable. Like, have you been reading Mystics and Mutants, Doug?
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about, isn't it? This is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. Curly does the same stuff where, now I've lost my spot. The secret meaning here is that the king is God himself, incarnating in the body of an animal, like the lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Right.
Where are you at, Doug?
I'm in Jason's piece in the sink.
Yeah.
Right. So here's the interesting thought that I'm having. It's like once we start examining the patterns and examining the monomyth, then we're looking for the agency and control of the manipulation of the pawns in the mystery play.
Yes. Let's see. This is Inception. And Inception, Leo DiCaprio is just sort of projecting like his own subconscious neurosis about Maul's death into the world soul, who is Ellen Page. And this goes through all of her movies, where she's the world soul. I think you've covered this before.
Yeah.
And then in Shutter Island again, we have Ben Kingsley as the hero fan of Leo DiCaprio's mystery play. Well, if we combine the two movies, you really see that these characters are interchangeable. So in one movie, like Dom Cobb is very specifically meant to be like the director of the movie. But then in the other one, he's the participant in sort of a mystery play for his benefit, which is concerned with how he killed his wife and his daughter.
See, it continues, though, in Martin Scorsese's Hugo. Ben Kingsley is the creator of the dream.
He's the film director.
Right, but they specifically equate the film to dreams. And it even has that train barreling right down the fucking middle of it, just like an Inception.
Exactly.
It's baffling. Because it relates the same message. It relates that personification that Kingsley becomes through both flicks. And in the Pan is behind Kingsley a lot in Shutter Island.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Pan?
Well, yeah. I mean, how does Pan relate to Kingsley in that role? Is the god of everything?
Yeah, and, you know, he's the devil. In a certain sense, he's the lord of Maya.
The Lord of Illusion. Yeah, in fact, he even...
Yes, and so this is the whole paradox that goes through, like, Kubrick's Lolita and also Nabokov's book where it's like Claire Quilty is the bad guy in it, and he's the guy putting on the play for Humbert's benefit. But at the same time, it's like Lolita is working with Quilty to perform the play for Humbert, and it's all really about him. But she has to kind of work with the devil in order to get this message across. Because it's the only way to get through this.
Interesting.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. Because it somehow speaks to the moment that we're having where there's this huge conversation about Kubrick and his films and how they're satanic in nature, that somehow they're helping to program the Valis loop. But speaking about the mystery play and the idea that you can transcend the wheel of time.
Yes.
In your piece, you kind of show how Obama is the resurrected fool. The other now becomes the king.
Right. This is the whole thing in Harry Potter with Sirius Black and all of that. But there's no reality to these stories. They're just echoes. You shouldn't take them as having any meaning.
But they could be signposts or guides to... So instead of... This is the problem with Gnosticism. It's like, how literal do you treat these metaphors? Where is this actually the roadmap to how one... You know, looking for a literal sync rapture where you transcend the wheel of time and then you're a light being and, you know, eating Skittles or something on a tree with ducks. I don't know. Or is it just something to help us get through the day?
That's how you really have to take it. It's either, this can be the element of your enslavement, or you can use it as a tool, okay? I mean, you're in prison. You don't have a lot of choice in the matter. You're trapped in Shawshank Redemption in the Shawshank prison for killing your wife, and you got to find a way out.
For killing
now you
your
can
wife.
Either use the rock pick they've given you, or you can just sit in your jail and complain. So whatever you want to do. I don't like it either. I don't remember having a choice in the matter. I'm just telling you how it is. I don't make the fucking rules, okay?
Dick's Gnosticism also enables us to understand something of the paranoid style of American politics, and perhaps not just American politics. For example, Dick constantly comes back to the theme of Watergate and the rather odd idea that the removal of President Nixon is the reassertion of the true deity over the false idols of the cave, namely that the phenomenal world is a prison governed by corrupt, secretive, and malevolent, elites. There are too many political analogs to this view to list. What do you think about these? What do you think?
Oh, it's probably true. I mean, like Doug said it somewhere, like, you go far enough back, and, like, the only one responsible has to be God, and he's a fucker. I think Doug says that a lot. And then you look in Fight Club, like, the guy who takes down the towers is Tyler Durden, and he's God. And
he kills God.
Yeah, he has to kill God at the end, because he is a sucker.
But then the other thing, the other interesting point of view into this whole stuff is the idea of it's a manifestation of psychological processes. And so we have this ego that is kind of our space suit, our survival suit,
yes.
But that we kind of have to take off to reach the more pure thing at our core. But then there's also the imposing, I don't know, that it's a strange paradox to think that we're creating our own cues that we need to become what we truly need to become.
I know. It's not something that can be apprehended logically, which is
right.
Really why we need all these movies to kind of, like, not need, but if you take these movies together, that they express these different contradictory points of view, which at the same time all just reinforce the same idea. And from there you can sort of begin to comprehend these multiple viewpoints of seeing the world as sort of a prison and a tool, and really however you want to take it.
What's our time looking like, Doug?
Well, we're 30 minutes into this week's 42 minutes.
And I should emphasize again that that the whole Pan symbolism with Ben Kingsley really goes back to the idea that he's sort of a god of nature,
right?
And not
the god of nature, and therefore evil is nature.
Right. He's the ruler of like sex and death, essentially. It's the sphere of generation that we're talking about, and either you can continue generating or you can reverse the flow.
See, the thing is, again, I'm getting two different views on this. I'm getting one view that nature is wonderful, man is good, and I get the other Grant Morrison type of mentality, which is no, like the whole object of man is to consume and do exactly what we're doing to bring Earth to a higher state. So is it the whole idea that the Earth is becoming a star and that we're killing the Earth so that a star can be born?
That sounds a bit silly.
that's an old idea. It's not mine. It's kind of ancient, I guess you could call it.
The Manifesto of the Noosphere. I've had that as my bathroom reading now for a little while. But that's kind of the thrust that this guy's making. So an individual or everything's evolving, but then the macrocosm is also evolving toward a higher level of consciousness, which is that curiosity where, and this is where we run into so many problems in the think world, is where if everything is evolving toward the singularity, that can be kind of scary because we're finite individual creatures and we don't want to lose our own independence. It's not even independence, it's our own will, you know. It's the fear of communism where somehow by submitting to a larger group we're losing our own identity. But it's an interesting thought that the Earth is a living system that's evolving towards, I don't know, it's strange, and that's why I think it's all, you know, a lot of the ways to explain this is in science fiction.
Yeah, I see the universe as being subject to entropy unless you take the conscious effort to reverse that entropy, which is the whole Back to the Future plot, where you'll have to go back in time in order to correct the entropy of the universe, which is, again, La Jetée and 12 Monkeys with the necessity of time travel to recapture a lost fate.
Well, so in the stories, you either have it, and they lived happily ever after, which is transcending the Wheel of Time, or like 12 Monkeys where he's really caught in the wheel, and then where he has the big reveal in the movie theater where he says, the stories are always the same. The only thing that changes is us.
Yes. Well, I know that movie's kind of a downer. I shouldn't have mentioned it. I just played La Jetée for a song. But he dies at the end of that one, too.
But then, right. Okay, so but that brings me to my thought. The strangeness in the synchrosphere of Moon Key, Jake and Jim's Moon Key, and Nietzsche's idea of the Superman with man being the bridge, which kind of plays with the monomyth as the evolution of man into something greater than he's been. Do you see any, I mean, there's lots of examples in film of that playing out, but I'm not coming to any in my head right now. I don't know.
There is definitely an element of that. Perhaps we should better regard it as healing of the anguish of the world soul. I like that better. It's less patriarchal, talking about Superman and all that.
Okay, I can dig with that.
And that this is really the substance of the Gnostic mythos. The Savior comes not to redeem just people in general, but specifically to redeem the fallen world soul, or Pistis Sophia, the pure part who has been trapped within the wheel of time and all of that by her own creation, the archons and the demiurge and all that, who really symbolize like the power of the elements in nature, who have a certain shadow attached to them, which is really the anguish of Sophia in her alienation from the light of Pleroma. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And the interesting thing I'm thinking now is the story of Western civilization, where we do have that separation, and we're living in a patriarchal system, and so you could take that as the, you know, the hero's story to try and bring it.
And the problem that people have is that instead of conquering the world within, they instead decide to conquer an external entity, an external other, without realizing that this is only a manifestation of their own delusions toward, their own desire towards an internal oneness, which they then project outwards into the world. And so I suppose my issue with the Wrong Way Wizard is that he has this idea of an external savior, which then sort of ignores the really fundamental issue that he has to become his own savior and participate in the mystery of the restoration of the fallen daughter, so to speak.
I think that's only,
which is really what the mission of the Messiah should be in the Kabbalistic sense.
I don't know. I think we're going to have to present him with that. I think we need to get you two guys together and talk this out.
Well, I don't know if
he still believes in external Messiah.
I don't know if he does. I think that a lot of what I get out of him is almost like, stop looking for an external. Stop looking for something to save us, because it's not going to.
Okay, well, see, I'm not sure about that, so I don't know.
Do you believe in an external Messiah? Do you think that there is going to be? I know you kind of already said no, right?
No, that's the monstrous lie of the New Testament.
The demonstrable lie. Harsh. So, what about yourself as Savior?
You'll have to be it.
Say, huh?
You've been called to be the Savior. That's also...
I knew it! I knew it, Will!
That's the whole thing, where Fisher is basically the Messiah. He's the Fisher of men. He's the Jesus figure. So, but Fisher represents the audience in Inception. So what it's saying is that everyone in the audience is their own potential Messiah.
It seemed like that's what Joseph Campbell's message, too.
Okay, so Fisher's character is the audience. See, they're going three levels deep in the dream of the audience, because the dream is the movie is the dream, and they're implanting an idea that reality is not real and that you have to commit suicide?
No.
He has to overthrow his father's empire, the father being the Demiurge, of course.
Of course.
But the Demiurge also might be Leo DiCaprio, because he's the king of the world.
King of the world.
You guys are crazy. I'm sorry.
But so it's taken from like a literal, concrete point of view, though. So we're these human creatures. We are alive in the world, and the world behaves a certain way that creates suffering. And so perhaps we can find some solace in these stories to lead us into a world that yields less suffering?
Exactly. And simply living in the now doesn't always alleviate suffering, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's the issue.
There's definitely an interplay between the past and the future.
Yes.
But that brings us back to, I don't know. the monomyth, and watching it play out over and over and over again, and how.
Well, look, now that you've come to this point where you're like, I can't take the stupid bits anymore, I can't take the loop, now you can consciously work to extract yourself or not. You know, you can either take a leap of faith or become an old man filled with regret. That's your choice.
There was a great line in your... where Luke sacrifices his right hand to the work, and instead of joining his father, you know, plunges into the abyss.
Yeah, so that is the moment there. He can either join the, once he realizes that Osiris is a black god, he can join the Empire or not.
And by black god, you mean
the Darth Vader, you know,
the Dying King, the Necrotto, or however you pronounce that.
Yes.
Well, you know, we're at the end here. We have a minute left, and I just want to say that your piece in the Think Book really is well written. It really illuminates the tarot, which I think is the Western book of wisdom.
I rather ambitiously tried to put the entire universe inside of it.
I think you did a pretty fair job. Thank you for coming on. It's hard once we start talking about this not to go absolutely crazy, because we're dealing with metaphor and a level of concreteness, and then like moving back and forth between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it for this week. Next Tuesday is the transit of Venus, so that's going to be a strange show. We look forward to speaking to you then, and until then, everyone take care.
Peace.
Bye-bye.